I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on patreon.com/FU Network TV and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Broken Clock podcast time again, and as promised, we're doing part two of our series on immigration, and we're specifically focusing on what I call irregular migration, but what certain shrieky types in media call illegal immigration. And I thought I'd seen Illogic Mouse in other debates. I am amazed at the lack of any logic presented. Maybe they have logic, but presented in the public comments on the those who do not believe in giving irregular migrants some sort of path to status and or citizenship. It doesn't go beyond, there are rules. You broke rules, Hulk no like.
Oh, I have words for those.
But that's it. Am I missing something? You understand this issue much more than I do. What am I missing here?
Well, I'm going, also, I have to say that irregular migration, like I said last week, it sounds like an Activia commercial.
Yeah.
Do you suffer from irregular migration? you know what? I think someone needs to do a parody commercial with an anti-immigration screed like Ann Coulter.
Yeah.
Doing the I don't know, Radativia or something like that.
Well, they're the ones that say illegal aliens. They use language of dehumanization to try to make you feel less bad from, you know.
So ironic that someone with an Irish last name.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, then you get into the, but we came here properly. Mm-hmm. And that's where the ignorance begins.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Here's the thing. The people who constantly screed against the, oh, you broke rules, therefore you get to be punished, naughty boy. See, I have observed these people for quite a long time. There are a few who are indeed very, very concerned with the rule of law. And these people are people I call as a sort of an intellectual shorthand, Javerts. Those of you who have not read Les Misérables, and it is an enormous book, so I think, or seen the musical, don't watch the movie.
You're trying to get me to tangent.
No.
You're trying to get me to tangent because you know my feelings on the movie. Okay, I'm doing it. Please continue.
These people suffer from one very particular intellectual error, and that is the appeal to the blind obedience.
Right.
It's kind of like a disguised Kantian categorical imperative, by which all law is to be respected and to act against them is wrong. So the people who are constantly saying, you need to come here legally, you broke the law, therefore you get to go away. First of all, they never asked, well, is the law in question that was broken? Is the law that was broken a proper objective law, or is the result of political maneuvering? Is it the law? Is it the result of people going against the spirit of the law? And by that, I mean the principles established in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Because in all respects, you know, people in the United States, they're taught that their history sprung from people who rebelled against the unjust rule of law. Mm-hmm. So for the people who say, you know, who constantly trumpet the rule of law, you would have to ask them, well, okay, so let's exchange the current immigration laws. Let's change the situation. And let's talk about the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. You know, for background, that law forged during the split between the North and the South, pre-Civil War, it requires all found runaway slaves to be returned to their masters.
Mm-hmm.
So you would ask them, you know, so if you were in pre-Civil War America, or, you know, almost ready to go into the Civil War America, and this was an act, a rule, a law, would you then hide these slaves, or would you turn them to their masters? Because that is the rule of law.
Right.
You have to respect. And then, of course, they say and this is where the anti-conceptual mentality kicks in, because they will say, well, those situations are nothing alike.
Yeah.
But are they? Aren't they? Here's the thing. In order to be able to understand the operating principle behind a situation or a series of situations, you need to be able to abstract the principle. Mm-hmm. You cannot stay on the concrete. So you can, a person who is who has an anti-conceptual mentality is not capable of doing that because of the paradigm that they have adopted. So they will see, for example, in this case, they will see the Slave Return Act and slaves being oppressed as entirely different from unjust immigration laws and people who would have been legal immigrants 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Breaking that law. Yeah. They see that, oh, no, there's not the same level of oppression. It's not the same thing. But it's not really about levels of oppression. It's about the violation of fundamental human rights. And as I mentioned before in the previous podcast, immigration is a fundamental right, because I hold that all of the rights of a human being have to stem from his or her metaphysical status as a sentient living human being. All of the things that would allow that person to determine his or her life in accordance with his resources and his, you know, and all of the necessities are a right to him. So a person has a right to dispose of the fruits of their labor mm-hmm. as they see fit. They have the right to be able to work, you know, mm-hmm. they have the, be it to be employed for someone else or to buy someone else or to be self-employed. They have the right to own their property
mm-hmm.
because you cannot dispose of the fruits of your efforts if you don't have property, right?
Right.
You have the right also to determine where you're going to go. Now, these rights are not things that other people must grant you.
Right.
These are things that governments protect. They don't give you these rights. Governments do not give you these rights.
Right.
These rights exist at a metaphysical level because of the nature of what it is to be a human being.
Right. We discussed this in part one, the fact that a right is not something that just applies to citizens. Because
right.
therefore it's not a universal human right if it only applies to some people.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for example, I have in this very basic set of metaphysical principles, I have the right, if I want to move, say, to Canada, mm-hmm. I can move there. I should be able to move there. Does that mean it entitles me to Canadian citizenship? No, because citizenship is a type of privilege.
Right.
It allows you to participate at a certain level in government.
Correct.
Right? And it's kind of a statement of commitment. You know, I can move to Canada and I can be a resident, but I can choose, you know, I don't want to be a citizen.
Right.
And I'm fine not running for office, not, you know, not voting, etc.
Right, right.
But, and so, these are the rights. By creating a draconian immigration system, like most governments have,
mm-hmm.
you have rights, basic human rights, that are being violated. And what's more, it is creating criminals out of people who have done no other crime except crossing a border.
That seems to be the part where the anti-open immigration types falter. They can't grasp the idea that this is something of an arbitrary crime.
Right. And here's the thing. And of course, people who talk about the rule of law, in this case, like I said.
I like that. That was cool.
The rule of law. I call them Javert because in Les Misérables, Javert is considered to be, a very, very good inspector.
Right.
He's held as a pillar for the community, etc. He's also a sanctimonious prick.
Yes.
Whose paradigm worships the letter of the law in detriment to the spirit of the law.
And right. You have
the protagonist, Jean Valjean, who has a rough start in life. He becomes a criminal for various reasons.
Right.
Mostly to keep his sister's child from starving.
Yeah, he steals a loaf of bread.
He steals a loaf of bread and does 18 years.
Right.
And so, not unlike, some of the time that people who are caught for marijuana use.
Yeah, people getting life for smoking pot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he eventually is given a second chance by a kindly bishop. And that changes his life, and he decides to become a good man. He becomes an exemplary man, kind of a bastion of ethical behavior.
Right. Right. Well, and kindness and charity, and he becomes an upstanding member of society.
Mm-hmm. And he owns his business, and then owns a factory, and employs hundreds of people, and then becomes a mayor. But to do this, he had to break parole.
Right.
Because nobody was willing to employ him because he was an ex-con.
Right.
And so that was his other crime. But Javert chases him throughout the entire novel because in his mind, he broke the law.
Right.
And therefore, he could never be a good person, even though there is plenty of evidence that Valjean is a virtuous, ethical, good benefactor.
Right.
Eventually, he gets Javert receives such evidence that he just can't ignore.
Yeah.
And basically, Valjean saves his life.
Yes.
And Javert basically goes has a blue screen of death, divides by zero.
Yes.
Because he is faced now with a contradiction. He is faced with the possibility that the ethics and the principles that he has upheld his entire life are wrong. And being the kind of rigid anti-conceptual mentality that he is,
right.
Instead of living with the consequences that he has made mistakes and that he has wrongs that he has made that he needs to right, instead he kills himself.
And I think that's why Les Misérables has been so, even though it's a very thick book, it has stayed on in popular consciousness through adapted media because that story is so universal.
Yeah,
there are so many people out there right now who are like, disrule, follow rule, and they never question whether the rule they're defending is in fact just.
Yeah, and here's the thing. These people who argue, for example, that irregular migration, because I want to use that term, illegal immigration, because that's the language that they use, creates insecurity, creates crime. This is an interesting thing. They cite the lack of security, especially around the border. And of course, they say that the irregular migration creates a potential for terrorists and criminals to slip through the unsecured borders. And so that what we need to do is close the border. Now, here's the interesting thing. All of that level of insecurity, that threat is created because of these immigration laws.
Yeah.
I can explain this. Because, here's the thing. Let us take a look. Close your eyes and imagine the border. Any border right now. It doesn't matter. So, imagine that there is a wall, figurative or literal, doesn't matter, along this border.
Right.
And this is basically, you shall not pass. Mm-hmm. Right? This represents all of these draconian laws. And you have a tiny trickle of people passing through the approved point, because these are the people who are lucky enough to have the resources or the connections or the contacts to be able to get through the legal immigration process. It is again a trickle in comparison. So you have all of these other people who cannot come in legally. Most of them are not criminals. Most of them are desperate.
Right.
You're tired, you're poor, you're huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
Yeah.
So how do these huddled masses get to be free? How do they go somewhere where they think they have a chance of living or where they can help their families? Well, they're going to have to cross the border illegally because, once again, like in Prohibition, when you set up an unjust law that bars a right, people will still try to get that right.
Yeah.
So you have this disparate, dispersed scattering of people crossing the border at all levels, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have this ocean of people moving in through this border. And you have the Border Patrol, right? You have the Border Patrol, which is still a finite number, much smaller than the wave of immigrants that want to come in.
Yes.
Right? So let us go into, was it Eric or Jared? The poison Skittle?
Oh, I think that was Don Jr.
Don, yeah, that idiot.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's pretend that the poison Skittle isn't there, right? The poison Skittle is moving in one of the waves.
Right.
It's hidden in one, a tiny particle in thousands of particles, right? And you've got these border agents running back and forth trying to catch everyone. And of course, they can't. There's seepage. There's people that just get through. So, wow, the poison Skittle got through. Therefore, we need to close the border even more, right?
Yeah.
Now, this situation, for those of you who understand what troubleshooting means, this is not a bug of these rules. It's the feature.
Yeah. Like anybody knows that if you block off, say, a river, if you put a dam over a river and don't allow a small amount of water to go through, that river is going to breach the dam.
Mm-hmm. And what you have here is essentially all of these draconian laws that make it so that very few people can even come in have created basically a system that is rife for insecurity.
Yeah.
The very laws that these people defend. Because if you had, and I will qualify that what I'm going to say, the name of what I'm going to say is not exactly what you think it means. If we had an open borders policy, you could have the majority of people who currently cannot come through because they don't have the money, because they don't have the connections, or they don't have a job offer.
Right.
Because you know, last podcast, I explained just how Byzantine the whole H-1B visa process is.
Yeah, I did some reading after you mentioned that. It's like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. It's a ridiculous system.
Yeah. So you have all of these people who otherwise would have crossed the border with an open borders policy that requires, like, you know, something like a background check, you know, the disease check that used to happen at Ellis Island to make sure that someone who was coming through did not have a communicable disease, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes.
If you had that, all of that ocean would be, to use language that these authoritarians adore, would be in the line.
Right.
Because they have no reason to fear from the border agent. They don't have border agents who are essentially looking for every tiny reason to bar you from entry. They're only looking for criminals, people with a criminal background or with a potentially communicable disease. So what happens? What does that do for the poison Skittle? The poison Skittle suddenly has to try to cross the border all by his own little lonesome.
Right.
Or with a clump of people who have criminal backgrounds and cannot come through.
Right.
Suddenly, the Border Patrol is no longer trying to catch an ocean. They're trying to catch a small wave.
Right. They're trying to catch one fish.
So even for the rule of law fetishists, the very thing that they're worshiping causes the problems that they're complaining about. And that is how you that is how you identify the principle at work and how you identify a contradiction. And furthermore, how you can assert that a policy is immoral.
Well, here's another way tackling that poison Skittle thing. Because every group of people is a bowl of Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
Every group, I mean, the British locked room mystery is based on the idea that there is a murderer within the ranks, right? And that's only like 6 to 10 characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you apply the same law, the same poison Skittle logic to every other law intended to create safety and security elsewhere, we wouldn't be able to do anything. Mm-hmm. Because it's the funny thing is that the U.S. was founded on the principle of freedom over security. Now, a lot of people will say that was the wrong call, but that is the reality of the founding of America. Everything about America was meant to weight freedom over security, meaning there was an understanding you take somewhat more risks, but that's worth it because what, you know, what is safety without the ability to pursue your best self? That's what the pursuit of happiness part is, right? Right. And so that's what I find not compelling about the poison Skittle argument, about the argument that, no, this is to keep us safe. I mean, first of all, they're keeping people out through minor, for minor drug crimes, which mm-hmm. let's face it, that's not violent.
Yeah.
And
it's a victimless crime.
It's a victimless crime. And that's where I get to the other thing you said earlier about, oh, they're criminals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Show me one person who is never, I mean, I have never smoked pot in my life. People can't believe this. And the fact that people can't believe this indicates how many people are out there who have smoked pot before I know. It was legal.
That's kind of funny because I have never either, but you know, we're the same person. So.
Yeah. But I mean, imagine if you were kicked out of the country for smoking pot.
Yeah.
Or imagine if you were kicked out of your job for smoking pot. A lot of people consider that unjust. A lot of people consider that unfair. But we are talking about a crime that is just jaywalking across an international border. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And if you give it a term like international jaywalking, which, oh, jaywalking, like, what's a big deal, right? Yeah. As opposed to, you know, illegal immigration, which sounds scary. I'm not sure why. It's a real clobber.
Oh, I can tell you why.
Why is that?
It triggers one of the languages of politics. And if those out there who are not aware of what I'm talking about, you might want to pick up a book called The Three Languages of Politics. Mm. I'll have the author by the end of the podcast because it has absolutely slipped through my mind because I haven't had enough coffee. But this particular wording triggers the barbarians at the gate
okay.
reaction, which is on the language of politics axis is the civilization versus barbarians axis.
Is it Arnold Kling who is the author?
Gosh, give me a second.
It's Arnold Kling. I mean, you're right. The whole barbarians at the gate thing is
effective. Yes, Arnold Kling.
It is Arnold Kling. Okay. The whole barbarians at the gate tactic is effective. Now, this is why we do podcasts like this and talk about how it's an appeal to emotion. You know, it's manipulating an emotional response. It's very easy to make a person feel fearful. We know how to do that.
Right. And it's kind of funny because most people will even make allusion to the sacking of Rome, even though most of them can't tell you what exactly happened.
Yeah, that's a weird comparison. But I mean, see, here's there's this great site, and I can't find it now, but I stumbled on this site preparing for this podcast. And basically it was just a straight up I think it's procon.org. And they did a straight up, here are the arguments made in favor of the particular question I looked at, but they take multiple takes on it. They specifically address the path to citizenship mm-hmm. for irregular migrants. And you read the pros and they're all very fact driven, right? They're, mm-hmm. oh, it'll be good for the economy if we give them if we give them landed status, if we give them status, like a green card, essentially, that'll make this much money. But if we give them a path to citizenship, it'll make this much more money. And it's logical and it makes sense. And it points out that the current system isn't working. And then you look to the against side, mm-hmm. and it's all basically they broke rule, no break rule. And I'm big on rules because I'm a systemized thinker. I look at this and go, you can't have a rule for the sake of a rule. If yeah. we're all just following rules because they're rules, that is either authoritarianism or it's fucking Mean Girls. Excuse the F-bomb, but there was nothing else there. This is the equivalent of we all wear pink on Wednesdays.
It kind of reminds me of the, it's, here's the thing. I do suspect that these people who are so hell-bent on rules, on the sacrosanct, inviolable nature of rules, I think that they know in themselves, and this is just me, you know, armchairing this, but right. I think I have a good, I have some good basis for this, that they believe that if they themselves were in an environment where certain rules were not a thing, that they would not be able to restrain their own conduct. And I say this because many, many times these people tend to be also very, very staunch religionists. Mm-hmm. And when I have discussed theology with them, because I have nothing better to do sometimes, we come down to the notion of morality. And many of them hold that morality is essentially rules set down by God.
Right.
And the reason you should obey them
is because God.
Well, not even that. Yeah. Many of them say, you know, if you don't obey them, you're going to get punished eternally. And when I saw this pattern emerging over and over again in this particular subset of people, and of course, I am not a pollster, so I cannot, and I am not getting paid for this.
Right.
So
like you said, you're just spitballing this.
Yeah. I'm spitballing this on based on the number of people. And it is not a small number.
Because no, it's
as
not.
You know, I get on kerfuffles and scuffles verbally. I have noticed that there is a very large number of people that believe this, that that you should follow morality, not because it is the right thing, because you have arrived at a right conclusion, but because if you don't, you will be punished.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there's a root to that. That's basically, and I say this, it's going to sound like a joke, but it's not. They were abused as children. I've been having conversations with certain people who are either lapsed religious conservatives or current religious conservatives. Mm-hmm. And all their logic comes down to, I believe this because when I was 5 years old, mommy screamed at me and scared the hell out of me. And yeah. So I cannot come out of this thinking. They are traumatized.
Well, it's take a shot because I'm going to mention Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand mentioned one thing, interesting thing about morality versus religious authoritarianism.
Yeah.
To be able to get to a code of ethics, to be able to have a moral code, you need to be able to reason. You need to be able to ask questions. You need to be able to say, why this? Why? You have to ask why.
You can't do that when you're traumatized. It is incapable. You are incapable. The brain is pushing out stuff that doesn't allow you to do that.
Yeah. And this is by design.
Yeah.
It is by design from several organized religions have this, you know, set in, you know, this is very, very frequent with the Baptists. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you essentially have a system of commandments, here's the thing. This is my favorite point that she made. You cannot have moral commandments. It is an oxymoron because morality cannot be commanded. Morality mm-hmm. has to be reasoned. So you say, you know, you cannot eat this, you know, oh no, wait, you cannot say this about me.
Right.
Why?
Right.
Because I have said so. And if you don't, and if you violate this, I will punish the F out of you.
Right.
It's a commandment is something that does not allow for reason. It is essentially an application of force.
Right.
And force is contrary to reason. Now, you have this trauma that many religions have in them, many religious practices, you know, that as they have developed in this country and in other countries, have developed over generations. And these people are carrying these traumas, these almost assembly line traumas, because it repeats so, you know, it's so prevalent. And they bring it to other things that are not religion.
Yes.
Such as this debate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think also there's an element. Sorry, go ahead, finish your thought, and then I'm going to bring something else.
No. Go ahead.
Basically, there's another thing where religion, Christianity, I shouldn't say religion, Christianity, is, as one of its central tenets, this was grafted on. I know I'm doing, because we're getting into really deep theology here. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, where did this come from? Many Christian frameworks are some mix of Greek and Roman pre-Christian thought grafted onto various forms of something else, originally Judaism, but then when you get into Latin America, the fusion of the Virgin Mary and Mary Magdalene and Santa Muerte and all that stuff.
Oh, the Santa Guía.
Yeah, you get these amalgams. And if you dig deep enough, you can see where it's like, oh, that's where Paul wrote himself into a corner. And it's like, well, I can't do that because I'm basically still, I'm a guest here. And so I can't hit too hard on this point because they will kick me out.
Yes.
And so we get some of these very odd contradictions.
Well, and doesn't help. It doesn't help that if you flip through a good amount of the Apocrypha of the Bible, because you know, some people may not know, and I found this kind of frightening. But then again, I went to a Jesuit high school. I learned this as part of my theology history. That the books of the Bible that you have now are not all the books that existed. Bishop Irenaeus decided to basically run through and see which books were being read the most or the most popular. It was basically a popularity contest, and he threw out the majority of the books that were not consistent regarding several particular points that he wanted to make. And so the Bible, as we know today, came to be.
And yet the book of Luke still made it through. I don't know how. How that one squeaked through, I don't know.
Someone must have bribed someone. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. They're like, well, you know, if we invite these guys, we have to let their buddy Luke come through
come
too.
In.
Like, yeah, it just, yeah, that one just, whoa. But anyway, go on.
but you know, if you go through all of the other Apocrypha, you find some very, very interesting things, like the Gospel of Judas that argues that Judas was not a traitor, because of course Judas became the scapegoat to demonize Jews later on.
But he was playing his part.
Yeah. There's all sorts of different, many different interpretations, and of course we had the Arian heresy, because the divinity of Jesus was not canonical up until a couple of centuries in.
Nicene Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but,
so
yeah, but so with this idea of natural law theory, which goes back to Greek thinkers like Aristotle, who were basically it's the flawed philosophical principle that has been used to justify
everything.
Slavery and the dehumanization of people, and I won't get into all the nitty-gritty details because they are quite contradictory, but it is basically the idea that white men are top of the human food chain. This is not because of various social systems. This is not because of luck. This is because it is natural. And women and everybody else, especially women who are not white, are lower beings, and this is natural. And it's impossible to not see a lot of that in people's opinions about illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. They did an episode of Silicon Valley where Silicon Valley is based on four guys. Richard, who is the main guy, he's the typical nerd who has this great idea, and you know, the stress of his job is making him sick because he's CEO of a tech company. Then you've got Jared is a deep well, but this story is not about Jared. Then you've got Dinesh and Guilfoyle. And Dinesh is, I believe he's Pakistani, but in one episode, Guilfoyle is a Canadian Satanist. And it turns out that while Dinesh is being harassed about whether he's in the country legally or not, it turns out Guilfoyle is an illegal migrant. And so he just goes down to, you know, he goes down to the government office, says, I have a job, I have a unique skill. He gets his visa in an afternoon. Now, that doesn't happen. They played it for laughs.
Right.
But the whole point they were making is that it was because Guilfoyle was a white guy from Canada and not a brown guy whose family is originally from Pakistan.
Right. And you have seen people who look at my name.
Yeah. Aisha,
you've seen this. And they immediately, of course, most of them are Trumpansies, and they go, well, are you in the country illegally? I thought the border with Mexico was closed. Maybe I should look into it. And of course, I have one of Colorado's top immigration lawyers and retainer go, I usually say, okay, go ahead and report me. Right. I hope you know what penalties are associated with false reporting, because I would very much enjoy driving your car.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing though, right? Like, they don't realize that people come in and out of America every day. One of the great strengths of America is that it borrows from the rest of the world because of its corporate innovation. And because, you know, a lot of these big companies, this is changing rapidly, by the way. Where, you know, North America is ceding way too much ground to China on this point, because China just takes any good idea, retroengineers it, and claims they came up with it.
Yeah.
Which cuts down their development cycles, you know, down to 25% of what a truly original idea takes. But the US used to have its pick of the global workforce. And then this idea of merit, I believe it started as a backlash to, well, it started as a backlash to the slaves being freed. And I find that whole term awful. I've been thinking about this lately, the idea of the slaves being freed.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't so much that the slaves were freed, it's that
we stopped enslaving them.
Right. Yeah. Like, because it is immoral to enslave someone, you do not have the power to free them.
Yeah.
Freeing them sounds like an act of charity, right? Like you rescued a hostage, as opposed to people going, my bad, you know? So it goes all the way back to there, but it really got going when affirmative action became this big issue. And it's kind of funny that some of the judges on the Supreme Court who the Republicans rely on now for you know, a steady stream of reliable, nonsensical legal decisions are, like, Clarence Thomas is an affirmative action hire. You know, he's one of the worst judges in Supreme Court history.
Yeah.
And he was a Republican pick. So affirmative action works great for Republicans when they can use it, but it tends to be this scapegoat, this whipping boy, regarding everything that's wrong with America. And people seem to have trouble with the conceptualization of affirmative action and similar programs are not giving people of color an quote-unquote unfair advantage. These programs are recognizing that white people have an unfair advantage and they're trying to partially correct for that. The same way that when you run certain races in track, everybody doesn't start in the exact same position. And so that's done. It's staggered on the curve because if you're doing multiple laps on a track, the long distance runner on the outside of the track has to run further than the person on the inside of the track. Mm-hmm. That is the purpose of that. Similarly, you know, so on and so forth. We can do all the sports ball metaphors we want, but.
Well, you can. The only sport I really know very well is swimming, and that's about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's equal for everybody. But, yeah. You know, it's, this is a stumbling block that people really need to understand if we are ever to actually get some logic on this issue. And I admit that I am not able to overcome this false idea in people's heads that the system is currently fair. People are obsessed with this artificial construct of merit in systems that are inherently subjective.
And here's the thing. This entire exercise of merit-based immigration is in and of itself pointless because it should not be up to the government to decide based on merit. Who gets to step in outside of anyone having, say, a criminal background? Again, because here's the thing. Because I enjoy bringing things to the full logical conclusion. I enjoy taking people's statements and go, okay, well, let's turn this rule into a universal.
Right, yeah.
It should be obeyed. So here's the thing. If we're going to do a merit-based immigration system, mm-hmm. then we should have a merit-based citizenship system for everyone in the right. United States. If you don't meet certain quota, certain, say, income level, the same things that are asked
right.
of immigrants in Stephen Miller, who I swear is the mouth of Sauron, proposed systems, then you don't get to be a citizen. Because why are we asking people outside of the United States to come to the United States only if they meet this criteria and be citizens, if we're not willing to do the same for the people born inside the United States? By what principle are you saying that the people in the United States somehow have different rules than the people outside the United States when yep. it comes to the notion of citizenship? Because right. you are treating citizenship as this holy grail, as this unattainable, yeah. this super important thing that only certain type of elite, certain super qualified individuals should have. But then you hand it out to anyone who squeezes out a baby?
Yeah.
There's a contradiction in there. So if you're going to have that stance, you need to apply it logically to everything.
Well, and you've just sort of through the back door gotten to where I see the massive logical flaw in the anti-amnesty, for lack of a term, stance.
Mm-hmm.
There are, best guess, at least 11 million people living in the U.S. right now without papers. Large portion of those are visa overstays, but there are you know, some people who came across the border one way or another. There is absolutely no way they're going to find all 11 million of those people.
Well, no. And if they did, it'd still be a massive economic failure because here's the thing.
Well, yeah.
People, here's the ticker terms, or they don't pay tax. Here's mm-hmm. this is a Schrodinger's immigrant who is on welfare and not working at the same time while also taking all his jobs. But here's a funny thing. Immigrants pay taxes. Even undocumented immigrants pay taxes.
Because of sales taxes.
Well, not only sales taxes, but to work, a lot of them do have fake IDs.
Right.
And so you have taxes deducted from their paychecks. Taxes that they cannot
get a refund on.
From.
Yeah.
You know, because most people will get their social, you know, assuming that they don't bankrupt it, Social Security, whatever.
Yeah.
But these immigrants are not going to get that because that's not getting filed under their real identity. Even if they do become citizens later, all of that money, it's, you know.
And even
everybody else gets that. Everybody else gets that.
I mean, it is impossible to live in a society and not pay tax some way because there are sales taxes, there are value adds, there are, you know, so on and so forth. But you have this coming demographic wave, and it's not equally distributed throughout the U.S. You know, there are illegal migrants in the north, but let's face it, a lot of them are in America's breadbaskets, which are red states, right?
Right. Many of them are picking up, you know, picking your harvest and your fruits.
And COVID has proved you can't get citizens to do those jobs.
Nope.
We actually have a hilarious situation up here where one of the maritime provinces, I believe it was New Brunswick, barred temporary foreign workers because of COVID. And now they are forcing high school and middle school students to go out and do the fisheries and the crops and all that stuff because they don't have the labor to do it. They chose indentured underage servitude over migrant workers.
Well, and we had back in 2017 in California, when Trump started cracking down on illegal immigration, you had crops rotting
just sitting there.
In California because this crackdown created farm worker shortage and nobody wanted to do those jobs.
No, nobody does. So, okay, there's people are going to keep coming into the country because the country needs them to come in. The longer they do not have an effective temporary foreign worker program, the bigger the demographic wave is going to be. Because these illegal migrants are having children. Some of like the dreamers, even the dreamers are young adults now. They are having children. There is no way that the children of dreamers or illegal migrants are going to vote Republican because of the way they're treated.
Nope.
So now the Republicans have a problem. The Republican choice is not get rid of all the Chicanos. Right? They lost that fight in the 1930s. It's, do we have a demographic wave of, even if they can get a quarter of them, right? You're still talking about 7-8 million people in new battleground states like Arizona and Texas that are only getting more populous and are becoming purple states. They can either do immigration reform now and take their chances with a demographic that is by default pretty religiously conservative, and they have a hope of swaying. I mean, look at Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. You can get Latinos to vote Republican. And because some Latinos are pissed off at being called Latinx. more on that possibly another time.
Another time.
Yeah, but as it is, a lot of these families don't have just one child. So they are multiplying. So for every person the Republicans keep in the shadows regarding illegal immigration, you're dealing with 2 to 3 future voters who you can't stop because they were born in America. So now instead of a problem of at best 8 million people, you're dealing with a problem of 24 million people. And that's, like I said, assuming they manage to round up and deport 25 to 30% of the people here. That'll flip elections. That'll flip states.
Yep.
And that's coming in 4 cycles, maybe. It's already starting. I mean, that's why you're seeing Texas and Arizona become competitive. That the children born, the siblings of the dreamers who were born in the U.S. as opposed to in other countries, they have citizenship and they're voting, and they ain't voting Republican. And so now they're doing these stupid like voter disenfranchisement stuff that at this point it's so obvious it's impossible to not see what they're doing. And it in many ways what's going on in the U.S. right now looks very much like the 60s. you know, that got Nixon reelected. Mm-hmm. The difference this time is the fact that, well, first of all, the 60s already happened. So there are a lot more people who are aware, but also that that Latino base, that Latin base, was not as established in the 60s as it is now. And that's the big blind spot in this, they're taking our gerbs, argument that rules, you broke rule, that the Republicans are doing right now. They are creating a demographic tidal wave against themselves, and they know it. And right now they're bailing out the boat as fast as they can. And the guys who are in office right now just hope to hang on long enough so that they can get their piece of the pie, ironically, because they know they're going to get wiped out eventually. They're just milking it for as long as they can. And the irony of that is how similar a circumstance that they are sitting there biding their time, knowing at any point they could get caught and get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so strange. And this is the problem with setting policy based on false morality, the moral commandments, attempting to command morality instead of reasoning morality.
Pretty much.
You end up getting situations like this. And yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
And here's the thing. One of the things that they love to use is that they're defending the quality of lives of Americans.
Right.
And I could say a lot on that, but I think it's time for a quote, if I may.
Yeah.
It's the fullness of that quote that I read last week, but I think it applies very well today. So in a Ford Hall Forum session, mm-hmm. Ayn Rand was asked about closing the border.
Right.
This was back in 1973.
Right.
So these dogs have been barking for a long time.
Yeah.
The quote, she replied saying, "No one has the right to pursue his self-interest by law or by force, which is what you're suggesting with closing the borders and impeding immigration. Mm-hmm. You want to forbid immigration on the grounds that it lowers your standard of living, which isn't true. Though, if it were true, you'd still have no right to close the border. You're not entitled to any self-interest that injures others, especially when you can't prove that open immigration affects your self-interest. You can't claim that anything others may do, for example, simply through competition, is against your self-interest. But above all, aren't you dropping a personal context? How could I advocate restricting immigration when I wouldn't be alive today if our borders had been closed?"
And that's true of most people in America right now. Anybody but an indigenous person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is exactly true. Unless your last name is Whitefeather or the like, you are only alive because of immigration.
And I don't understand that quality of life argument, because the very people you're claiming are wrecking your quality of life are cleaning your houses and picking your food and delivering your goods and watching your children.
It's because it's the assumption that we touched on last week that Americans should have American jobs, and therefore no one who is not an American should have one. But again, that is essentially nationalizing the notion of labor, which is
there's a breakdown there though.
Oh, there's a breakdown everywhere.
Because here's the part of the breakdown, because we have to beat on Trump at some point during this, because let's face it, he's exploiting the ignorance here.
Yes,
it's not just ignorance. He's exploiting the
xenophobia,
but also the hypocrisy of the argument. Trump mm-hmm. is very good at taking positions where, well, you can't criticize me, because if you criticize me, then I'm just going to criticize you, and you ain't better than me. But even though they claim to be against foreigners, hear the air quotes in my voice, coming in and taking our gerbs. They voted for a guy who used loopholes in the immigration system to bring in Eastern European women to work in his hotels because he likes their accents.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you know, some people argue, well, that's the job. And yet they would not apply that same reasoning to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how someone gets that way without there being just some underpinning of illogic that they're not willing to confront.
Oh, that is kind of what you just said is the theme song of the United States has been the theme song of the United States for the past 50 years. The whole notion of compartmentalization,
yeah,
where you don't have to deal with contradictions in one sphere because you're focusing on another sphere. And it's a massive act of evasion. And in many cases, and this would get too deep, so we're not going to go too deep into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of the great causes of this is the postmodernist thinking.
Yeah, and that's... Maybe we need to do more specifically on postmodernism because...
Oh, I think so.
That quite frankly, I mean, the postmodernist issue, yes, it has infected the right, but it has infected the left to a much greater degree.
It's everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's this logic that starts with a feeling and doesn't progress beyond that. That's the real issue. I mean, the number of people out there who are... in support of making marijuana and potentially other drugs legal, but are still anti more open immigration.
Yeah.
That always baffles me because you're defending a practice that whether you have the right to damage yourself or not, it is one, very bad for you. Two, also connected to other crimes to a far greater degree than international border jaywalking is, right? So how do you defend the decriminalization of many drugs and not the right for people to come here, even if it's in some sort of temporary foreign worker program with a potential for a citizenship after a certain amount of time? I do not know how people justify one and not the other. Other than, well, we're citizens, it's different.
Which, interestingly enough, harkens back to the whole notion against which America rebelled, which is the notion of aristocracy.
Right.
Aristocracy, you know, privilege by birth.
Yeah.
You know, rules apply differently to us than to you plebs. That is exactly what they're falling into when they're saying, oh, it's different for us, we're citizens.
Well, yeah, and hate to break it to you guys, but if they can't come here, then they're just going to set up companies in their own countries.
That's another thing with a more stringent H-1B visa limitations. You are essentially creating a whole generation of competitors who are going to outcompete you because they can't stay in the country after they get their degrees, most of them. So they're going to go back and they're going to compete against you. And here, and that's, you know, then of course they will howl about how these companies want to go overseas and
whatnot.
Well, you know, this is, as Francisco D'Anconia says, brother, you asked for this because this is a monster of your creation.
Yeah, we talked about that in part one, the fact that you're educating your competition. It doesn't make any sense. It just, the U.S. is falling so behind in terms of healthy economic policy that, I mean, look at Mexico. They're people coming through Mexico are not necessarily from Mexico trying to get into the U.S. right now.
Right.
Because the economic situation in Mexico, it's still not, you know, a standard that people in the US and Canada would be content with, but it's much better than it was. Mm-hmm. It's hit the point where people don't feel the need to move to the US to get, say, auto manufacturing jobs. or right. something like that. If these anti-immigration proponents were actually serious about the issue, they'd be looking for ways to bolster other economies to get them to a certain point where you remove the push factors from places in South and Central America. Because until those push factors are removed, no matter how draconian you get, no matter how many border hires, no matter how many border guards and ICE agents and things like that you hire, attempting to cross illegally into the U.S. is still a more logical risk than staying in their country of origin. And that's the central issue for me, is because the issue is so illogical, they're not dealing with the reality that if I were in some of these people's position, I can't claim I wouldn't make the same choice. Because if you stay where you are, it's definitely not going to get better. If you take that risk, you could die, but there's a chance. And human beings need hope. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. They're dancing around all this ridiculous commandments, but they're not addressing the inherent clear as day logic in why people make these lengthy, dangerous journeys to begin with. And it's no different than the decision that their ancestors made when they were coming in on boats from Ireland and Germany and Italy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly so.
So I guess so go ahead. Sorry.
So if they're still staunch anti-immigrationists, then they should just come out and say that they would be far, you know, that they would be very, very willing to grab dear great, 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 great Aunt Fanny and turn her Fanny around and send her back to Ireland,
right,
no matter what happened to her.
Right. Exactly. Well, unfortunately, they did that to the Jews back in the days.
Yeah.
On some boats. And mm-hmm. it's almost like that was just long enough ago that people have been given moral license to forget that and what happened. And so it's happening again, because people like to put dirt over those prior bad acts and act like they didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they complain when it starts to stink.
That's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah. If you keep burying your past mistakes, you can't complain about the smell of rot now. And I mean, I'm hearing the Poor People's Campaign and stuff like that are talking about reconciliation in terms of slavery. They do need some sort of structured reconciliation process. We're doing it up here. It sucks. It's messy. It feels awful in the process, but it's the only way. It's like physiotherapy after you get a cast off. It's not fun. It feels terrible, and it's absolutely necessary, or that weakness will just perpetuate. Yeah. All right. That sounds
I think that we've reached a wrap.
Yes. All right. Yay. Okay. This has been the Broken Clock Podcast on the FU Network. You know, Patreon, PayPal donations. FUnetwork.tv is the hub to get everything, including merchandise and all that good stuff. I have been Leanna Kersner with my partner in Thought Crimes, Mouse Mary, just reminding you that thinking is good for you, even when it hurts sometimes. Mouse, as usual, you have the last word.
Stop digging holes and try opening a couple more doors instead.
This is fun! The FU Network!